Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison, and to our listeners on WIBE.
Today we have a panel of three participants, each giving their personal perspective on the question, what it means to be a humanist. I'm Bob Park, and I'll tackle that first. At our August meeting of the Humanist Union, we heard an enthusiastic report from Sarah Olberg about the new humanism hosted by the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard last year. I went to the conference website and at thenewhumanism.org and got on their email list. I like their approach to humanism as something constantly updating itself with the changing times in our society. Yesterday, I followed the links from that email to the Continuum of Humanist Education, which also supports that approach. And I read Lesson 2 of their public Introduction to Humanism, the Lesson 2 being the Contemporary Humanist Philosophy. So anybody who wants an intro to humanism can visit that website, and it's a free publicly available two-lesson course. I also followed the link to an interview with Greg Epstein, who is the humanist chaplain at Harvard, a public radio program from American Public Media called Speaking of Faith. I found a lot to agree with in both what I read and what I listened to. I've never been particularly interested in the history of humanism, and certainly feel no obligation to defend statements in the past by others who may have considered themselves humanists, for example, making a blanket condemnation of all religion. I like to focus on the positive aspects of a humanist life stance. When I answer the question, what does it mean to me to be a humanist, I generally start by saying, I believe in love and compassion in human relationships, and I see no need or a supernatural explanation of anything in the known universe. I share the non-theistic outlook of most humanists, but while I have read some positive definitions of atheism that I would be comfortable with, I've never applied that label to myself because I see it typically being defined by theists in our society to mean someone who insists that my God does not exist, or some similar sentiment. I do not see myself in that role. I realize that other people have their God concept is very important to them, and for me, that sort of thing simply carries no meaning, but that doesn't imply hostility towards such God concepts. It's really a matter of how does that influence their actions towards other people. And I think religion can be a positive thing, it can be a negative thing. I believe in good and evil in the world, and I think one of the great evils in our world is religious intolerance and the actions that lead some people to take. I believe that scientific questions deserve scientific answers. I believe in the scientific method for answering questions such as, how did our world come to be? I think it's fascinating to read current advances in genetics, evolution of our human genes. Professor Carroll at the university talks about fossil genes that we all carry with us, that our genetic makeup shows the experiments that evolution went through and things that discarded that we no longer use, but they're present in our genetic makeup, showing the path where we came from in evolution. We also have a recording on the website from last Darwin Day from Professor Shubin at the University of Chicago, who has talked about some odd makeup of our components, which go all the way back to our fish ancestors, and how it would make no sense to design a human this way today, but going back to how we evolved, it's fascinating to see how some of these things are present. I see no, of course, as a humanist, I have no holy scripture, so that frees me to read anything that I find inspiring and see what I can learn from it. So that's an introduction to my view, and let's let Belinda go next.
Thank you, Bob. Well, mine is more of a personal evolution, and I promise I won't take you all the way back to fish. Humanist principles were a strong part of my upbringing, and in thinking through this, I really am realizing how strong they were. Deriving happiness from helping others was the backbone of my Western homesteader heritage. I observed my parents work to benefit society long before I knew the term humanism. My parents were rural school teachers, and their school had no social workers or counselors or psychologists. Teachers filled those roles, just as I did during years I taught in rural public schools. During the Second World War, my father provided emergency assistance to military personnel as a Red Cross field director in an army artillery base, and later he became the Red Cross representative in our hometown. Troubled citizens met my father in our living room, while mother and I stayed out of earshot in the back of the house. So in this role, my father, as a conservative Christian, demonstrated a commitment to service that is also of utmost importance to humanists. I remember my mother coming home at the end of the school day excited that a student had finally grasped a math concept or maybe a reading assignment, and she especially enjoyed helping students who had fallen behind their classmates academically. And like Mom, I have gotten much pleasure from helping students in many, many ways, and this is one way in which I live what are now my humanist beliefs. Our family was always close to the natural world, as are most humanists I know. I found joy, adventure, and comfort communing with animals on my uncle's farm, listening to camp-robbing jays high in Wyoming's Wind River Mountains, or cautiously observing a moose near a forest trail, or scampering on the rocks on my dad's favorite glacier-fed fishing stream, in which I skinny-dipped only once. To this day, my self-renewal comes from watching the stars emerge in the evening, or listening to the tinkling of ice on trees in the winter, or romping with a fuzzy dog. I am in awe of the universe and am fascinated with the amazing variety of human stories about its creation. My parents were strong proponents of the democratic process, which is also a strong tenet of humanism. Dad taught the Constitution in his history classes. Mother took her students to the election polls, and following in these footsteps, I believe one of the most important issues of current times, and especially right now, is the protection of our constitutional rights. Curiosity about the world and its peoples is a humanist value I particularly treasure. My world was expanded by my family's many moves from dryland Colorado farming country to a tree-lined college town to a military base in a segregated Oklahoma city. And that was an eye-opening experience to really see the horrors of segregation. To a boom and bust oil and agriculture community in the heart of Wyoming's expansive Shoshone and Arapaho reservation. In the middle of our main street, I danced to the heartbeat of drummers from the reservation. One of my closest school chums was a Japanese girl who had spent World War II in an internment camp. Two Mexican-American classmates who played guitar and sang joyful duets spurred my lifetime interest in ethnic music, and today I realize how fortunate I was to have had such childhood encounters. It opened the door to many subsequent interactions with peoples whose upbringing was much different from my own. A major turning point in my life came in high school while I was reading my father's copy of Ruth Benedict's book, Patterns of Culture. Benedict's focus on cultural relativity challenged my opinions and beliefs, which of course was her goal. I had a very specific moment of realization that had I been born in another place or time, I might strongly believe in something vastly different from the teachings of my father or the minister of our church. It was as if bricks were lifted from my head and I could at last think for myself. As a preteen, I didn't know what atheists, agnostics, and modernists were, but our ranting minister convinced me they were terribly, terribly evil. With my teenage awakening and a good dictionary, fear of such people vanished, and I came to know and surround myself with decent, caring friends whose focus was not on a God, or certainly not on the rigid, angry God of my childhood. In college, a wonderful American Baptist minister encouraged us students in a small youth group that we had to question, stating that there was nothing wrong with doubting Thomas. He was just an ordinary college student. I migrated to a Congregational Unitarian church, mostly for the choir and the great free-thinking discussions some of us had weekly in a private home. Graduate-level courses in the philosophy of religion spurred me further in the direction of humanism. And much of my life has been spent either in a humanistic, Unitarian, Universalist community, which I still belong to here in Madison, or when no such community was available, reading humanist literature. It's been a pleasure to also affiliate with the Humanist Union of Madison. My mother, in her later years, might have affiliated with a Unitarian or humanist group had she had the opportunity. She was greatly influenced by her Quaker grandmother, her kind Methodist grandfather, and her gentle mother. All spoke little of God, but were models of caring, humanist behavior. Mother was a strong proponent of women's rights, gay rights, and public school education. She was well informed about people and movements who threatened the institutions she held dear. This included religious leaders who damned secular humanists for promoting human rights and rational thinking. Recently, I found some of her information sources, which are still being read today. They included, and some of you know this book, The Battle of Mind, Tim LaHaye's expose of the so-called evil of our time, secular humanism. Mother knew little about secular humanism until, in response to Hayes' book, she subscribed to Free Inquiry and read the Secular Humanist Declaration. The humanist principles she underlined and agreed with in that document are in line with most of my beliefs. Currently, I am reading Stephen Eric Bronner's book, a wonderful book titled Reclaiming the Enlightenment. And I can imagine what a great discussion my mother and I would have had about that book if she were still alive. To me, humanism means the joy of serving others, the exhilaration of wrestling with ideas in a rational way, the awe and wonderment of the world around me, the warmth of friends and family, the freedom Ruth Benedict gave me to think for myself, and the pride of working with others to advance social justice and protect the democratic process.
Our third panelist, Galen Smith.
Well, I didn't prepare quite as well as Bob and deleted it, but I'm going to start with a brief bio. I deleted it. I was baptized as a Methodist in a month or so old in Laramie, Wyoming, where I was born. And my parents were Methodists sort of by habit, I think, because their families before them for two or three generations had been Methodists. And so I went to Methodist Sunday school and the church. But it never really took, as far as I was concerned. My father was a biologist, and I don't think he believed in any of the doctrines. We never talked about it. And he was sort of a naturalist, but he was a very conservative guy, and he just went along with the social, because of the social aspects, I'm sure. My mother was a little stricter, but one time I asked her what she thought of hell, and she said, well, I think that people create their own heaven and hell right here on earth. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I was maybe 10 years old, and they were telling me church there was a hell, you know, and you had to worry about burning in hell. Eventually ended up in California. My parents were divorced when I was 15 years old, and my mother and I moved to California from Chicago in shortly after that. I finished high school out in California, where I attended a church, Methodist church. There was a charismatic youth pastor at that Methodist church. As a teenager, while I was going through all the angst of the last couple of years being a teenager, I found that youth group in the Methodist church very sort of comforting. And I thought I maybe believed in all of the doctrines that I was asked to believe in. But when I then had to go in the military during the Second World War and finally left home completely and went off to Boston from California on a train, I had a sudden total loss of faith. I realized it was all just nothing I could believe in. And so I was left with complete kind of a vacuum, and it was very unpleasant. And it wasn't until eventually I met Rose, and she came from a Jewish background. From her parents didn't insist on going to a synagogue or anything. And we decided that we would have a Unitarian minister marry us, because this is a good compromise. And that introduced us to Unitarianism. I didn't know anything about Unitarianism. We had Reverend Reserve from the First Unitarian Church in San Francisco. He was a wonderful guy. Marius. And then gradually, as we worked out our marriage, and we ended up in Whitewater in 1965, we joined with a very small group, about 15 people, I guess, there who had formed a little fellowship, a Unitarian fellowship. And that was when we really seriously got into Unitarianism. Meanwhile, I'd never even thought of humanism as a philosophical framework or anything. It wasn't really until 2004 when Bob here began this humanist group at Prairie that I really began to think about humanism as a kind of a religion or a alternate philosophy, and it's very attractive to me. One of my problems is I'm a scientist, and I find I cannot believe in anything, any supernatural cause of natural phenomena, period. It's just absolutely impossible for me. So I'm constantly seeking scientific explanations, but of course, some of you people are scientists also, and you realize that the deeper you go into trying to answer scientific questions about nature using scientific method, the more you find that there are unanswerable questions. they're just every single question that you try to pursue ends up in a question, a big question mark. And that's a huge mystery. As far as I'm concerned, it's just, it remains a huge mystery. My mind refuses to invent supernatural causes for these things. I just have no idea at all. It remains a mystery as far as I'm concerned. So what humanism, as I understand it now, especially means to me, is that it validates my lack of belief in supernatural powers. And it connects me to like-minded people, so that I have a real sense of belonging to groups like this, and of course worldwide, and also historically the whole, I mean, the roots of humanism go back to the very beginning of history. Five centuries or so B.C. And there's nothing terribly new. It's just that in the context of the current world, things seem to be especially new, and we have unique problems, of course, in the world now. I found it's been wonderful to be part of this humanist union here at Prairie. I've learned an enormous amount over the last few years. It's been 4.5 years, I think, they started in about January 2004. And if you look through all of the programs that we've had, Bob has online, they covered a large number of very, very good subjects with expert speakers and so on. So I've learned an awful lot, and I've got some of these archives here, and a lot of them are available online. Also, I find it very helpful, humanism very helpful to counter the religious extremism that we're finding increasingly throughout the world. Christian, Muslim, Jewish, you name it, almost every religion in the world has its extremists who are causing huge amounts of trouble. Terrorism, bombings, attacks, wars, overpopulation because of their promotion of large, of high birth rates, and so on. And I think humanism as a kind of a guiding philosophy or religion or whatever you call it, humanism is, of course there are many different kinds of humanism, as you know, is an excellent alternative, and it's the kind of what the world really needs, I think, to balance the tendency of the world to be dominated by those religious extremists. Specifically, we have an election coming up, of course, and the choice of Sarah Palin as a vice presidential candidate, and her connection with that church in Wasilla is very, very troublesome, and her religious philosophy and her religious beliefs as are emerging make me wonder. I'm particularly concerned by the attempts of the religious right to take over this government of the United States, which is I think absolutely true. It's not an imagination of mine. And I think that if Sarah Palin ends up as vice president, this adds greatly to that danger. Movement toward theocracy, whose aim is dominionism, dominion that is total control over this country, and by means of control over this country, over all of the whole world. This is the aim of a lot of those religious Christian extremists now. So I'll end there and let's have a discussion.
You mentioned that Jungism had a very early beginning. What kind of culture did that come out of?
I don't know a lot about it, but I have a, here it is. This is a handout in one of our early programs, Timeline of the Evolution of Humanist Philosophy. I don't know who prepared this. It doesn't have a name on it. It was probably from a 2004 program. It's a good summary. It starts with 6th century BCE, with great thinkers such as Confucius and Lao Tzu in China, and Buddha in India, Zoroaster in Persia. Anyway, I don't know who's traced this history, but it goes through.
At one point, we had a program on the series of three sermons done by Scott Prinster at First Society about our humanist heritage and the UU denomination, so he might have put that together.
Yeah. It's all in the China area.
It's well, it goes on to 1973, the Humanist Manifesto, too. So this is a kind of a rough outline for somebody who wants to follow up on all of it. Here's the philosophies. Warren can probably address this a little bit.
Well, I would point out that something that neither of you may hear me explicit, and that is that humanism is liberating. People enslave themselves by constructing deities and religions.
Yeah, that was one of the points I was going to make. Thanks.
And this is, by the way, it's not an especially new point. There's a passage in Isaiah way back then where he ridicules or criticizes idolaters. And so they make their idols and then they bow before the idols. And Isaiah doesn't extend that thinking to Jehovah, but it's easy enough to do that.
I was just going to throw out a name. The big European tradition that really became important in the 15th century was Erasmus of Rotterdam, who was one of the great philosophers. And that was a very widespread movement. And of course, anti-church movement in a way. It wasn't really, if you read any of this stuff, but for that time, for the Middle Ages, Erasmus was one of the great intellectual liberators, really. And so from his writings, a big current of humanistic thought in the general term, that which means human-centered rather than a God-centered philosophy, started in Europe.
So. My question to the panel would be, did any of you have in your formative years a God-centered philosophy? And if you did, what made you change over to a non-theistic-centered philosophy?
I had a very intense God-centered philosophy, absolutely. I was baptized. I was brought up to believe in the rapture. Actually, I saw a movie in which people were sitting around, the family was sitting around the table, and then all of a sudden part of the family just disappeared through some kind of trick photography. But I didn't know about trick photography at that time. And I was quite young, and I was very worried. I remember asking my father if he were saved, and he got a little annoyed. Of course my father was saved. Then we had a schism in the church, and my parents got fed up with it, and so they ended up going to the Methodist Church, which was a transition for me from a vengeful, judgmental God to a loving God. And that was big. I mean, that was very, very important to get a more positive take on Christianity. And it was probably even though, you know, I read Benedict and I certainly began thinking very much for myself in many, many ways, I think I transitioned probably through my college years gradually from an intense God belief and praying to God to just simply not being part of my philosophy. I never became anti-God. And I think if people want to believe in God and if that's helpful for them to be a better person, I have absolutely no problem with that. I don't want to condemn God believers. I will condemn people who try to impose their God belief on others. So that's, I guess, where I stand.
I came through a Methodist period as well. And,
interesting.
Me too.
It's not true. Actually, that once a Methodist, always a Methodist.
No, not at all. I was raised in the United Church of Canada, but moved to the United States when I was 9. Methodists were part of the United Church of Canada, and here in the States, they were not. No such comparable organization, so the family shopped around and ended up going to a big Methodist church, and I attended that even through my undergraduate. I didn't attend the church. After I got to high school, there was something in the evening, a program for youth and college age called the University of Life. So I attended that because that meant I got out of going to Sunday morning services. And, looking back at some of the things I wrote in the college level newsletter, I'm surprised now that I was really still trying to work with a God concept and express ideas about that. After coming to Madison as a graduate student, I was first involved with the Wesley Foundation and a youth group at First Methodist, but soon became involved with the Unitarian student group and ended up as president of the Channing Murray Club. And I remember when I wrote my father about my role as Channing Murray Club, he wrote back how disappointed he was that I had decided to accept shallow humanitarian Unitarianism instead of prayerfully searching for a relationship to Jesus and this sort of thing. But at least he had always expected us kids to think for ourselves, and he never bugged me about it after that. And I felt very much more at home with the kind of views that I've developed since that period than what I was raised with. Even as a teenager, I was uncomfortable with it. Confirmation process at the Methodist Church, finding myself having to go through sort of intellectual acrobatics to make sense of the religious dogma.
I'd like to just add something to that relating to the University of Wisconsin and Unitarian Universalism. When my father found out I was in both, he said they were hotbeds of communism, so gosh, you commies.
He might have been right.
So your dad thought it was shallow to be in that?
Right.
I think so, you're wrong. You can embrace so many philosophies.
Well, my father's concept of communism was anyone that was anywhere leaning towards liberal Christianity or beyond. Anyhow, I'm sorry, Galen, go ahead.
No, I don't think I ever really believed in God or the deity of Jesus or any of those things. I think that what attracted me to, especially in California and that church in Glendale, was feeling belonging to a group and a group of teenagers. And that kind of charismatic youth minister we had. When I left that then I didn't have that support, that emotional support any longer. And I didn't. I never had the sense of believing any of it, really.
Surely you and Bob can imagine a deity with a long white beard.
Imagination, yes.
Too bad the radio audience can't see the beards around.
Well, Charles Darwin looked very much like us, and so did Asa Gray, who was one of my heroes. Asa Gray, incidentally, never could. He was a botanist, a pioneer botanist in Darwin's era, 1850s to 80s, at Harvard. He tried to explain Darwin to the Americans. He wrote a whole lot of things published in the United States, so he was Darwin's sort of spokesman in America. But Asa Gray was what Protestant sect he was in, I forget which now. But Asa Gray just could never leave his or reject his Christianity, his belief in Christianity. So he tried his hardest to tell people in his writings that Christianity and Darwinism, evolution, Darwin's ideas of evolution were compatible. And it didn't work. He just wore himself out writing paper after paper. But that's a sideline.
Sure.
We look like other people.
I subscribe to two humanist magazines and try and read them cover to cover each month, and I generally do. One of the things that impressed me about some of the writing is that, without saying it this way, they are saying, humanists need something like Unitarian Church. What they're saying, you know, we need, and they describe, we need supportive groups, we need all of the things that happen, but they don't say, and I keep thinking to myself, well, why don't they just become Unitarians? And I can see by looking around this group that if everybody isn't a member of the church, I recognize them as attenders in any circumstance. But on the other hand, by reading these humanist magazines, I get a variety of questions, insights, discussion that I never get by reading the Unitarian magazine. And I feel at this point very much both of these are important to me. And that I realize that not all Unitarians are going to be interested in my humanist magazines. I would kind of think that most humanists ought to be interested in the Unitarian part of it. But to me, both aspects are important.
Well, this gives a segue into mentioning our speaker next month and the Ethical Society movement. I recently read something about how Unitarians were maybe half humanists and the Ethical Society congregations were almost 100%, at least in that writer's view. Certainly they're the only denomination that has humanist in some of their society's names, such as the Ethical Humanist Society of Greater Chicago, and we had a speaker from there couple of years ago. And our speaker next month is Ron Solomon, who is on the National Board of the American Ethical Union, which is the national organization of the Ethical Society movement, much like the UUA. And he's also on the international group, which the Ethical Society movement affiliates with on the international level, and that's the International Humanist and Ethical Union, which has been active with the United Nations for many years in defending religious freedom rights and that sort of thing, has been particularly active in recent years
as Muslims had tried to get special treatment under the language of religious tolerance for actions against anybody who criticizes Sharia law and that sort of thing. So I'm hoping we'll get some valuable insights into that work at the United Nations from Ron next month. He was this past summer elected as a vice president of the executive committee of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, along with Mel Lipman, who's the president of the American Humanist Association. So it's a much smaller movement than Unitarianism, but if I were had a choice at this point in my life, I would choose to affiliate with an ethical society rather than a Unitarian group. Although Prairie has been to the left of mainstream Unitarianism enough that I felt comfortable here, where I wouldn't be so comfortable in at James Reeb or Church Society.
I can tell you one advantage of being a Unitarian: when the Jehovah's Witnesses come knocking on your door, don't ever say you're an atheist. That's red meat to them. What you do is say, I'm a firm, strong member and believer in the Unitarian Church, since they don't know anything about Unitarians anyway, why they go on to their next knock on the next door.
There's only one young person and one, let's say, middle-aged person here. All of the rest of us are oldies, to be honest. And the humanist discussion, what? Oh, there's another one. She's sitting outside. But what do we do with really small children, young children? We have a wonderful religious education department here. But for those people who don't have Prairie Unitarian religious education, what do you do? What did you do with your kids when they were small? Or were you sort of a humanist Unitarian then or not?
Well, that's why I love coming to the Humanist Union, because I'm the young person. I'm not the young person anyplace else. I'm 43 years old.
A child.
Well, just to share what I did, I felt like it was really important to give my children a grounding in religion because I wanted them to be educated. I didn't want to impose my beliefs on my children. I strove to allow them to create their own beliefs. And I told them that from the very beginning when they were, you know, very young. I chose to attend the United Methodist Church just by default, because that's how I was raised. So I felt like I missed the big opportunity because I wasn't well informed about Unitarianism. I would have chose that, I think, if I had known more, because I feel like Unitarianism is more closely aligned, very closely aligned with humanism, more so than other mainstream religions. Having said that, though, I did not baptize my children when they were young, as per you're supposed to do in mainstream churches, which caused a problem with my family. But they know me, and they knew that I felt very strongly about that. My children have chosen not to be baptized. They have not been baptized yet. Neither one of them are currently affiliated with the church. I've been trying to reel them into Prairie, but I think I've done too good of a job, and they're suspicious of organized religion. But I am very proud to say they do have thoughts of their own on the topic of religion, and that's my story with them. I think I did the best I could, and it was more about education rather than and values, and less about you must believe X.
Yeah, well, when did you first come to think of yourself as a humanist?
Probably when I was 13 or 14. I remember distinctly telling my parents, I'm not going to go to church anymore and sit with the hypocrites. And that didn't go over very well. I was young then, and I've learned to modify my statements a bit.
Modify or moderate?
Moderate. Yes, thank you. But I've always believed that people are people, and there's good and evil inside everyone, and we all should strive to bring out the best in one another. And I think that's, if you're going to boil it down, I think that's a humanist philosophy, and being raised Methodist, which is very common, I think some Methodist churches do a good job with that message, and some Methodist churches do not. I think Methodists in particular seem to have a wide variety. It depends on the congregation you get involved in. So anyway, thank you for asking the question.
Who wants to go first?
I just a follow-up. I think it was very interesting for one of these meetings is to have a panel of some of our lifetime raised UU children and talk with them a little bit about they don't consider themselves humanists or not, but kind of more as they've grown up, particularly going through high school, going through college, what it meant being a UU/humanist. And I think it's pretty interesting because we raise them here, they know about religions, they're very open-minded, they're free to believe anything, and then we stick them out in the world with the rest of the kids in high school and college, and they have a lot of really interesting experiences in not just defending what they believe, but further understanding. I think with both of our kids, they've now get the big picture and understand better what UU is and what UU meant, particularly now with their experiences with other kids. And
are they Unitarians now?
I think in spirit they are. Neither one of them are currently with a group. Mary Ann has attended the UU Church actually in Storm Lake, Iowa, meets on their campus. And she has gone a few times, but the next age to her was about 60. And she's there are no absolutely no young people, no teenagers, no one that's even in their 20s. So she has done some things with them, I think, and has one of the women who's the president of the group works on campus and Mary Ann bumps into her from time to time. But unfortunately that's not a great fit, but I think it's interesting. Mary Ann moved in her freshman year. The first thing she found out was she had moved in with a very evangelical, born-again Christian roommate. And within the first day, she established that, I don't believe in God. I don't want us to have fights about this. We're not going to talk about this. And they didn't. But it was, I think it was just interesting to see. I mean, the thing for me, I think, that made me a humanist was growing up with, I was Baptist, Jesus loves the little children, all the children in the world, but your father's going to burn in hell because he doesn't go to church and he's not a Christian.
Yeah.
I think that's really hard for little kids. I was scared to death. I mean, my father was anything but a born-again Christian. And I believed with all my heart that he was going to die and burn in hell and be separated from the rest of the family. I used to cry all night about it. I mean, it was really a very tragic thing to make a kid believe that. It was very sad, and I had friends that, I was sitting there thinking, who's going with me here? But you're supposed to be old, God loves everybody, and God's so wonderful.
That's flooding an evil God.
But you're going to burn, you're going to burn in hell. There's that constant threat and push that you need to be bringing these people in the fold. And I was convinced I had to get my father to understand the trouble he was in. And I would never want to put a child through that. But I think it would be very interesting to see kids who haven't had, we've all had to grow up in this, not all of us, I know Bar Park is one of the few lifelong UUs. I think there are a couple of other, I'm not sure.
Me.
But it's a few of the kids. I think it must be very special to grow up with that freedom. Have that freedom your whole life to really believe and think what you want to believe and think. And I'd like to see that.
There was only one time my father stopped me from talking to some religious people, and it was Hare Krishna's at an airport. I was thinking there was a kidnapping. Other than that, he was totally into questioning.
Were you were actually tempted? You were young enough to be.
Oh, no, I just like talking to them.
They
were so ridiculous. It was just like, okay. Spin you this line, and then they would you sat there quietly listening, and they'd spin you this line, and another line, and another line, and gradually they became so absurd it was just hard to keep a straight face.
I've heard.
Well, I can. Mary wanted to say something.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Mary.
My parents were humanist Unitarians without portfolio. They probably didn't even know those categories existed. But I was raised in a very humanist household. They were good people. They cared about the rest of the world. And when I said I wanted to go to Sunday school because my friends went, they said, sure, go ahead. It was within walking distance, so I went to the Methodist Sunday school for a while, but it didn't really take. And then I went to a liberal college, at Antioch College. When we got kids, we realized that we needed to do something to pass on the heritage, and it's in Denver, and we went to the library and found some of the Unitarian religious education books, particularly Sophia Lyons Falls from long ago, and many lands said, this is just what we want. So we went to the Unitarian Church in Denver. That's been going on ever since. But our children, although we weren't really faithful about seeing they got to religious education week after week, we did. What religious education they had was through the Unitarian Universalist Church, the Universalist Church in Monroe at that time. And interestingly enough, of our five daughters, three are very conservative. One's an Orthodox Jew, one's an Eastern Orthodox, and one's a fundamentalist Christian. The two daughters who died were more the religious liberals.
Were they married to men of those nights?
Yes, but our Eastern Orthodox daughter met her husband through that, and our Orthodox Jew met her husband after she converted.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but interestingly enough, now our oldest daughter's four grandchildren, kids, are kind of moving away from the Eastern Orthodox. Not, they can't do it radically because of not caring a lot about their families, they're, one of them has stopped going to church at all, and sending their children is trying to educate them at home. My daughter introduced her to the idea of Unitarianism, and my kids get older, she may go into it. But you bring your kids up to form their own beliefs, and
they will.
And they do.
Well, Max Gessler became a Baptist minister, so.
Really?
To his surprise.
Kathy, if you would talk to my son, he would tell you that he's a lapsed Unitarian.
Recovering.
I have a slight addendum to what Matt said. When we went to the library, we didn't expect to find an anthology of creation myths. We thought we were going to have to research it and write a term paper. And here it was from far away in many lands with the anthology that we had been inspired to write already created. And that was how that happened. You know, I think that's the way you remember it, isn't it?
Well, God led you to it. Yeah, God.
I have that book still, and I got it through the Church of the Larger Fellowship because I could find humanist materials. I was reading. I think I subscribed to both groups, and was getting information from humanists, but I wanted a curriculum. I was out in the country where there was just nothing that I knew of. At one point, we went to a congregational church when my son was really little, and we had they had a very liberal minister, and that wasn't quite right for me, but it was the best available. And then I, too, was a mail-order Unitarian for a while, just in order to get... That particular book was one that I read to my son a lot, and I really was just thirsting for materials like that.
I had remarkably little trouble with forming my own impressions because it was so obvious to me that a just and merciful God wouldn't send the heathen to hell because I was lazy and didn't go and preach to them. And even worse, some of the theologians says if you never heard the word, you wouldn't even ask. And supposing I was an inept missionary and I told them that I wasn't charismatic enough, I've actually messed them up in a big way. And I worked that all out in my own mind. And I knew it wouldn't play in Peoria, and I never told my parents about that. And then telling guys like you, I didn't even tell my friends.
Yeah.
As we wind up, is there anyone else who'd like to say when they first came to think of themselves as a humanist?
Oh, well, I just was going to tell the story about Nevena and how she realized that she was a UU when she was talked into going to what she thought was going to be a playtime with her, with these two girls who were pressing her to go to their evening, I forget what they called it, but it was part of the Baptist church. And we used to make excuses, oh, there's school the next day and so on. Finally, there came a day when there wasn't school the next day. So she wanted to go with these two girls. And we said, and she was all excited and got dressed up, and we sent her off and said, don't sign anything. So she went. And she's sitting in between these two girls, and of course it's a revival meeting, really. The minister is up in front, and the first thing he did was to ask if there was anybody who had not been saved, and she raised her hand. She didn't know what in the world they meant by that. And then he invited all those who had not been saved to come up front, and she didn't. And the two girls were prodding her to go up, and she would not do that. And at the end of the revival meeting, there were no games, there was no fun, no nothing. She was pretty disgusted. The minister came up and asked her why she hadn't gone up in front to be saved. And I don't know what she told him, but then he said...
said not to go.
We didn't tell her. Anyway, what she said... Then he said, aren't you afraid of going to hell? And she said, there is no hell. At which point, he got her to sign her name and address. And, of course, there came literature and a letter. And I asked, she was Nancy then, she changed her name to Nevena. I asked Nancy if she'd like us to reply to the minister, and she said, would you please? So I did. And he called, and I explained to him that we were Unitarians, and we respected his right to his beliefs, but please not to interfere. And he respected that, and that was the end of that. But the two girls, she found out that these girls would have gotten points for bringing somebody. And I tell you, when we'd see them at the grocery store, they were very uncomfortable. And it was a worthwhile lesson for Nevena. She decided, well, she was a Unitarian. She, you know, she didn't believe all that stuff she was listening to. And it was very nice. She came to the conclusion herself. And she learned that people who pretend to be friends aren't always. It was a useful lesson in many ways. But that was her only brush with fundamentalist religion. Yeah,
very, very quickly, the three kids are churchless. They never go to churches. My daughter, one she's talking about, is the most likely to be an active Unitarian, but she lives in New Orleans. And there are two churches there, and they're much, much too formal. She's tried them out.
They
way,
don't
way
compare
too formal.
With
Perry. Oh, no, it's no comparison.
Just a quick comment. We've been talking about a lot of our religious experiences, which whenever I get together with humanists seem to come out negative. And I just wanted to put a plug in that I've belonged to quite a number of different churches, and I've met a lot of people who I would consider humanists through that process. And I think that humanists, in particular, have an opportunity to focus more on what we have in common with people of a more deeply religious, maybe God, vision persuasion than the differences. And I think there are a lot of people out there that believe the general humanist principles. And we have a lot.
But their spouses belong to our theists.
Yeah, but we have a lot of things in common with people with a more theistic outlook. If we would leverage that, and I just wanted to put that plug in for all those people that I've met that are theists in their outlook, but humanists in their works.
There's an organization called Religious Humanists.
Yeah.
Sounds like an oxymoron.
Well,
one of the most active members is a Catholic priest who works for the Vatican and is an astronomer who actually lives in Tucson, Arizona, and is in charge of the Vatican's astronomy program there. They have a telescope and so on. He's a member of the Religious Humanist Society.
Is he a Jesuit?
I don't know what his I have him had in my files.
Well, there's certainly a religious humanist.
So there's a whole spectrum, quite a broad spectrum of people who call themselves humanists.
I think it would be interesting for our group to, at some point in time, join together with there are some evangelical people, I think, that will respect the fact that we don't want to be proselytized, and from other denominations. But I think a non-proselytizing group of Christian people who can meet together with us and maybe join together in some kind of an activity where we're doing something for the benefit of other people, I think it'd be a very nice experience.
And if we convince them, do we get points?
You get a star on your forehead.
Sure. But I think that there's a number of us here that the minute the proselytizing starts, I just get creeps up my back. But I think that would be a very nice thing to do and a very positive thing for us to do, too.
Well, maybe if the offense is the best defense, then you should beat them to the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a preemptive proselytization.
I don't feel comfortable doing that either.
My mother was good at that. She could give the Jehovah's Witnesses as good as they gave, and that's all.
Yeah.
Well, here at Whitewater, we had a group of people had an informal discussion for a whole year. We met once a month or something, and it was called Ways of Knowing was the phrase that we talked about. But most of the people involved were ministers, the campus ministers of various denominations. Mm-hmm. And they were very, very liberal and open to all kinds of philosophies. I was very impressed.
One of the things about Greg Eckstein's work at Harvard is that it tends to be more inclusive, and he's calling it the new humanism. So if anybody's interested in hearing that radio interview, there's a link to it from the links page of our Humanist Union website. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.